This is Losing Bridges with Ken Nash and Mimi Rosenberg.
And later on, Saudi Arabia and Jared Kushner, armaments and conflict in the Middle East.
But first, Senator Bernie Sanders speaks at a press conference after the Senate passed a war powers resolution to end U.S. support for the Saudi-led war in Yemen.
The United States of America will not simply follow the despotic lead of a government in Saudi Arabia and do what they want us to do. We are the most powerful nation on earth. We will determine our military and our foreign policy and not be led around by a murderous regime. So that is an important accomplishment. Second of all, what we are saying today is that in the midst of the worst humanitarian disaster on the planet, where 85,000 children have already starved to death, where we are fearing imminent famine and perhaps the death of millions of people, what we are saying now is we've got to end that war. We've got to help the people of Yemen with food, with humanitarian supplies, not with more bombs. So today we have said loudly and clearly in a bipartisan way that the United States will no longer participate in the Saudi-led war in Yemen. Thirdly, and very consequentially, what the United States Senate did today, and I expect that the House will once again do in a few weeks, is we are reasserting the constitutional authority of the United States Congress in terms of war making. For many years, under Democratic presidents, under Republican presidents, the Congress has abdicated its responsibility and allowed presidents to take our people into war without congressional authority. And today we say that ends. So this is a victory for progressives. This is a victory for conservatives. And I hope that not only can we end the war in Yemen, not only can we provide humanitarian relief to a people who need it so badly, but that today marks the beginning of a time when Congress understands what its constitutional responsibilities are.
And now we turn our attention to Saudi Arabia and Jared Kushner, in a way, armaments and conflict in the Middle East. And we are very pleased to have with us Mohammed Bassi, journalist and professor at New York University, a former Middle East bureau chief at Newsday, and a former Council on Foreign Relations fellow. He's currently writing a book on the proxy wars between Saudi Arabia and Iran. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So I want to begin with, on the Friday before Memorial Day, when few Americans were paying attention, the Trump administration announced that it would circumvent Congress and sell $8 billion in new weapons to Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates. It was Donald Trump's latest attempt to give a blank check to two U.S. allies leading a disastrous war in Yemen. But the public still seems to have relatively little knowledge and or concern for the atrocities that are committed in Yemen. So take us to the reality. Set the stage for us of the problem with the sale of these armaments and the behavior, inadvertent or intentional, of Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates as perhaps our proxy in the disastrous war in Yemen.
Okay, thank you. That's a very important question. So as you said, the Trump administration, right before Memorial Day, announced that it would bypass Congress and sell $8 billion in new weapons to both Saudi Arabia and the UAE, the United Arab Emirates. Many of those weapons will end up being used in that war on Yemen that those two countries are waging. They're the two lead countries waging this war since March of 2015. And this has created perhaps the worst humanitarian crisis in the world. The toll is staggering in many ways. And one of the reasons that there isn't very good public understanding in the U.S. of Yemen and of the impact of that war, is that we often hear this outdated figure of 10,000 casualties, and that's a figure that's often cited in press reports and other reports about the war. And the reason is that the United Nations at one point stopped updating that figure because it was difficult to get reliable numbers. But the toll is much higher. There are some groups that are monitoring the conflict, and one independent group has reached a figure of around 90 or 91,000 casualties. That includes both civilians and military casualties from the beginning of the Saudi intervention in 2015 through the present day. And a large proportion of the casualties are children. There have been some other estimates. In November, the aid agency Save the Children released an analysis estimating that as many as 85,000 children have likely died of hunger since Saudi Arabia and the UAE and their allies began their bombing campaign. So the death toll is staggering, both from the airstrikes and the direct war itself, but especially from indirect deaths. And here we're talking about things like the lack of food, a health crisis like a cholera epidemic. It's one of the largest outbreaks of cholera in the world today in Yemen due to the war, and damage to Yemen's infrastructure as a result of the war and the attacks by Saudi Arabia and the UAE. And I think one essential fact that we've missed is that we have this sense, and it's reinforced often by U.S. officials who defend Saudi actions and UAE actions in Yemen, saying that the killing of civilians, that the targeting of civilians is a mistake, and that these allies, these U.S. allies don't know exactly how to use U.S. weapons, or they're not targeting the weapons precisely. But this narrative, which has been gaining traction for quite a few years among U.S. officials and in some sectors of the media in the West, that the Saudis and their allies are killing civilians by mistake, that narrative isn't true. There's been significant evidence by most of the human rights organizations, United Nations investigators, and other independent investigations of the war that show that the Saudi coalition has actually targeted civilians and the country's infrastructure by design. So it's not that the Saudis and their allies don't know how to use U.S.-made weapons or that they need help in choosing targets. They're actually using those weapons as intended. And American officials have known this for years, starting under the Obama administration and continuing under the Trump administration. And certainly under the Trump administration, they've chosen to do very little about it.
Well, despite the fact that these atrocities are occurring and even getting worse, it seems, there doesn't seem to be, I mean, there was a bipartisan resolution bill in Congress that was passed, which Trump vetoed, but it's getting no traction in the press. Why do you suppose it's not being talked about more?
I mean, I think the Yemen war is being talked about more, certainly in the past few months, since the killing of the Saudi journalist Jamal Khashoggi.
Right.
There's been more attention. We've seen more attention, certainly in the first 2 years of the war, when there was very little coverage. I think there's a lack of attention to the detail and the back and forth between Congress and the Trump administration. Partly because it's a little bit complicated. It's a little bit of the machinations of Washington, and also because of the crush of news around the Trump administration that his veto, it was only the second veto of his administration to veto that bipartisan measure that you mentioned. That measure invoked the 1973 War Powers Act, and it argued that Congress actually never authorized support for the Saudi coalition. And it got support both from Democrats and Republicans in both houses, and finally passed after over a year of efforts by progressive members of both the Senate and the House. But the veto, got a burst of attention, and then it went away. It got overtaken by other stories. More recently, it's been overtaken by the threats of war with Iran, and the general kind of war atmosphere, sort of warmongering that's emerged around the threat of Iran. One way in which all of this is connected is that when the Trump administration tried to justify these weapons sales that we began the segments talking about, it actually invoked its favorite boogeyman. It invoked the Iran threat as the reason for expediting these weapons sales to Saudi and the UAE and going around Congress. Now, of course, that's not quite accurate in that if Iran posed an immediate and real threat, they would need these weapons right away, within weeks. And most of these weapons, it will take months, if not several years, for weapons manufacturers to deliver them to Saudi Arabia and the UAE. So the threat of an immediate Iranian risk, it just isn't there.
Mohammed Bazzi, let me also ask you. I'm reading through a number of your articles and certainly recalling that around this time, more or less a month, one way or the other, last year, there was a school bus, of course, that was hit, killing 54 people, 44 of them children. And the munition used by the Saudis was supplied, of course, by the United States, a 500-pound laser-guided bomb made by Lockheed Martin. So we know. But what you point out continuously is neither the U.S. and the top Saudi and UAE leaders are not interested. They are not interested in reducing civilian casualties. So how are we to understand the geopolitical machinations of the Saudis? And good gracious, are really the Saudis, or are we the proxy for the Saudis, or are the Saudis the proxy for us? But this a triumvirate that is creating the most disastrous humanitarian crisis in the world at this juncture. What are the politics of this? Where do the Jared Kushners and so on fit in? How are we to understand this?
I think it's a combination of proxies and different interests playing at different levels in all of this. And you mentioned the bus strike, the attack on the school bus last August. That was almost a year ago. It was a horrendous. It was one of the more horrendous attacks on civilians carried out by the Saudi-led coalition, and it killed some over 50 people. About 40 of them were children. As you pointed out, it was a 500-pound laser-guided bomb made by Lockheed Martin that was found. Human Rights Watch interviewed witnesses, and other organizations documented that it was a U.S. munition. And at first, the Saudi coalition insisted that it had attacked the legitimate military target. They've done that all along whenever they've been caught out in attacking civilians, and tried to deny it for a while, and then the international attention got too much. And there was some hope that this attack would lead to significant change. And one thing it did do was motivate some of the more progressive members of Congress to push for that resolution to try to end the war, try to end U.S. support for the war. It unfortunately may not have happened if it wasn't for that attack on the school bus. But the Trump administration has been almost its faith in Saudi Arabia and especially of the very ruthless Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman. So the Trump administration seems to have unlimited faith in him, and part of that is this personal relationship that he's established with Jared Kushner and with Trump himself. And we know that Trump and Kushner value these sorts of personal relationships. It's not clear if there's a financial relationship, and we may not know that until Trump is out of office. Certainly also Trump appreciates the way that the Saudi royal family handles its business, the way that it likes to deal with him through his son-in-law, and this is a familiar way of doing business and building relationships for Trump and for Kushner. And so he seems to have some comfort in that. And also this idea that the Saudis will be huge customers for U.S. weapons. Now, Trump has often, and Kushner as well, they've often talked about these $110 billion or $120 billion figures that these are weapons deals that they've made, that they've concluded with the Saudis, and they tout the kinds of jobs that they create and the economic impact. A lot of that is not actually true. A lot of these were deals that were made under the Obama administration and will take years and years to conclude. And a lot of these deals are also still on paper. They're to be negotiated. And so even that argument that this is bringing money into the U.S. economy is false. It's not. There's this twist here that Trump and Kushner, certainly, and some other members of the administration act as if the U.S. needs Saudi Arabia, when it's actually the other way around. It's the Saudis who need the U.S. far more than the U.S. needs them. They need U.S. weapons, they need U.S. political support, and they really wouldn't be able to continue the war in Yemen in the way that they've continued it without consistent U.S. support, and not just by selling these weapons, but also by providing the training and providing maintenance for the aircraft and sort of very daily active intervention by the U.S. And things are twisted. So again, it's the U.S. doesn't need Saudi Arabia in the way that Trump presents it.
So we've got a situation where there is deliberate targeting of water treatment facilities and food distribution centers, and none of this as inadvertent. And you point out in a number of your writings that the UAE and Saudis have conducted more than 19,000 airstrikes on Yemen since the war began, which is an average of nearly 13 attacks per day. About a third of those attacks are on military targets, while the rest are classified allegedly as non-military targets or unknown. And there we go, the buses, the school buses, the hospitals, the markets, the mosques, the farms, the factories, the roads, the bridges, and so on. So as we kind of wind up here, what does this have to do, if anything, also with the favored boogeyman now, the increased threat of Iranian aggression, allegedly? Over the past month, we've seen the administration has inflated the threat posed by Iran to U.S. troops and allies in the Middle East. Do you see a tie-in with our activities and our support with the munitions to Saudi and allowing them to carte blanche, terrorize Yemen, as having anything to do with the role that the U.S. sees in playing against Iran?
There's definitely a connection between the way that the Trump administration has decided to treat Saudi Arabia and the UAE and this hyping up the threat of Iran as a threat to the region as a whole and as a threat to U.S. interests and U.S. allies in the region. And one aspect of that is that the Trump administration, starting with Trump, has decided to basically swallow the Saudi-UAE line that Iran poses the greatest danger in the region and that the war in Yemen is actually an example of Iranian expansionism and that it's an example of Iran trying to set roots in Yemen and take control of Yemen and trying to destabilize Saudi Arabia and other countries out of Yemen. And that's largely not true. It means that Iran does play some role in Yemen. It supports the Houthi militia. Those are the rebels that the Saudis and the UAE are fighting. They took control of the capital in September of 2014, and then they kept marching south into southern Yemen and took control of most of that. And they, in that process, they expelled the internationally recognized government, which took refuge in Saudi Arabia and is now trying to come back. And the Houthis have some connection to Iran. They receive some support from Iran, but they're not as tied into Iran, and they've also shown a tendency to go their own way. And they have been firing missiles at Saudi Arabia. They recently attacked that airport in Saudi and other places. And some of those weapons might be coming from Iran. We're not entirely sure. Some of them were possibly weapons used by the former Yemeni military, some of which actually originated in the U.S., or some of which originated from the Soviet Union, sort of much older weaponry that has been around. So, but by buying this argument that the war in Yemen is a way to contain Iran and to force Iran to concede, sort of Trump has signed on to this Saudi and UAE line, and so there's very little effort by the U.S. now to push the Saudis and the UAE toward a political settlement, which is ultimately what needs to happen. This idea that only a military defeat would teach Iran a lesson and would contain the Houthis is misplaced, and it will only lead to more suffering in Yemen.
Well, we have to continue to devote more time to this. Thank you for giving us a primer on it. And we have been speaking with Mohammed Bazzi, a journalism professor at NYU, former Middle East bureau chief at Newsday, who is writing a book, which I'm most interested in. When's the book going to be done on the proxy wars between Saudi Arabia and Iran?
Well, I'm hoping in the next year or two.
Well, we'll have you back before that, and then we'll do the segue into the book. Thank you so much, because the issues that are being discussed here are a question of moral and political urgency for all of us to take up, and that is stop the bombardment of Yemen. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you.
And now, what these high school students want you to know about the war in Yemen.
The United States is not only complicit, but Yemen's causing the suffering of the Yemeni people, because the mass media won't cover it.
The greatest example of the military-industrial complex at work, because these companies like Boeing, Lockheed Martin, they'll continue making their weapons no matter what. Saudi Arabia is their biggest customer.
And when we sell the Saudis 70% of their total bomb supply, ultimately the buck must stop with us.
If I had President Trump sitting in front of me, I think the only thing that I could say to him is Mohammed Abdel-Ilah, who was a boy aged under 11 years old who died on a school bus with 39 of his classmates when an American Lockheed Martin bomb was dropped by the Saudi-led coalition. And that day, 51 civilians died, including 40 young boys. And that is a prime example of how American recklessness as to what's happening in Yemen with the weapons that we're selling is hurting people. Our support in this war goes to Saudi Arabia, who was able to get away with brutally murdering a U.S. permanent resident who was speaking out against the U.S. and Saudi involvement in this war.
I would not be in favor of stopping a country from spending $110 billion, which is an all-time record.
130 children starved to death. 85,000 have starved in under 5 years. That is staggering.
As long as we let them continue to make money in exchange for blood, in exchange for carnage, then we are going to continue to be responsible for this.
This war was never declared by Congress. The Congress has said no, and then the president vetoed it. And he is not the reflection of America that I'd like to see. The reflection of America that I'd like to see, it's a human being who cares about human lives, who's sitting in the Congress and voted yes to the Yemen resolution that Bernie Sanders introduced.
The current situation in Yemen is the worst humanitarian disaster on earth. According to the United Nations, Yemen is at risk of the most severe famine in more than 100 years. The people of Yemen need humanitarian aid, not more bombs.
If adults are really going to value money more, it's time for the students to step in.
Has been Building Bridges, your community and labor report with Mimi Rosenberg
and Ken Nash. And log on to our website at www.buildingbridgesradio.org.